Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tech and Teaching Podcast Live. I'm Eric.
That's I'm Jordan. Sorry.
God, jumped all over it, didn't we? We can't even get through the intro. It's been a while since we've done this show.
It's been a hot minute.
It's been a hot basketball-y, winter sportsy kind of minute since we've done done one of these. And we've had a series, though, of videos that we've done, Jordan. We haven't not done things. They've just been more spread out because we've had other things to do.
We've been busy.
And we know you have been busy, too. So we would love for you to join our conversation. We're on YouTube, obviously, so join us in the chat. Hit us up with your questions, the topics that we're going to kind of cover today. And if we can steer our conversation into the topics, that would be great so that we don't veer too far off because heaven knows in the afternoon, Jordan and I can veer sharply one way or the other, whichever way the wind happens to be blowing at the time. But our topics in general, some audio questions, capture cards. We're going to talk about some computer hardware, and we're also going to talk about the software side, which is Wirecast, and any other questions that you've got. We've got some. We would love more. Thought-provoking comments and questions.
That's one way to describe them.
Some of them have been curated by Jordan. Some of them have been curated by Danielle. And whatever else Hoosier puts up on the screen, I guess we'll talk about that too. So please comment. And also subscribe. We should say that.
That's kind of important.
We should subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the thumb. Is it the thumbs up, right? Isn't that the logo? Is that the button?
We don't even know how the system works.
I don't even know. Sad. All you got to do is hit subscribe, and or maybe it's a thumbs up or a bell so that you get notified when we go live next time or when we do this. Why is everyone laughing at me?
I'm laughing because of Hoosh.
Hit the buttons down there, all right? Not the next button, subscribe button and the bell. Do it. All right, so Tech and Teaching Live. See, look at that. I'm watching myself down here on my laptop, by the way, so I get an instant replay of, I'm sorry. We want to go into the audio questions.
Yes, we
first.
Do.
Jordan,
yep.
Please
yep.
Pull me back into this thing. And one of the things that we talked about was we wanted to talk about announcers and getting students into play-by-play. And so one of our questions was, how can we encourage students to take that step to become announcers? And I have, I guess this one's kind of for me.
Yeah, it's not for me.
As the announcer, you really have to, some kids will put on a headset and they'll talk and they'll hear their voice for outside of their own body for the first time and they freak out. You also just have to kind of shove them out of the nest. When it comes to that, hopefully, what you as a digital media teacher, as a broadcasting teacher, what you are able to do is really give them the safe place to literally fall out of the nest and just go try it and just go get into the world, start talking about whatever event it is. Is it volleyball? Is it basketball? Is it football? Whatever that is. Start with something simple. Maybe it's a ping pong, right? And it's about describing what's going on and stuff like that, and just trying. And you'll find that some kids have the kind of natural predisposition to kind of recognize what they're seeing and be able to talk about it at the same time. Some will be a little more. They need to kind of step back and go, "Wow, I really need to watch it, and then I can talk about it." Well, there's your color commentary, guys and gals. But really, that's the encouragement, is just go try it. And just recognize nobody, and I mean nobody, likes their own voice the first time they hear it. Can I get a cough button, Jordan?
All right.
Thank you. It's not going to be the last time we do that, by the way.
All right. I was too slow on that one.
Yeah, it's going to come. It's going to come at random times. Not much. I'm sorry, Jordan. Do you have anything to add?
Well, we do have a play-by-play course that would also help with that. But no, as a non-announcer, like, I don't do that. I have nothing to add. But how about you guys comment what your or who your favorite announcer is in the comments or in the chat? We'd love to know your thoughts or
don't say opinions. Me.
No,
no,
Eric's
no,
not a don't valid answer.
Dad's going to watch us. Don't. That's all right. That's all right. Don't worry about it. Jim Nance is about to call his final four after 40 years on CBS. He's pretty good.
Cool. I have no clue who that is. And how long has he been doing this?
40 years. Like, oh, you just literally my entire life.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
That's special.
Like, yeah, kid from Houston, he's calling it his final four in his hometown.
Well, that's special.
It is special. It is special. What else can we talk about with regards to audio, Jordan?
Well, how do you empower students who really like announcing to take other roles in the stream, like the camera operator and producer? Mm. I would think it'd be pretty hard to go. My opinion would be you'd start off as producer or the camera guy being the lowly, and then you work your way up to announcer. But I think you have a different opinion to that.
I do, actually. I have the opinion that every digital media teacher, every broadcasting teacher should start every kid in the play-by-play and or commentary role first so that they understand the every single aspect of a broadcast. As a radio background, I had to learn very quickly everything about how did I want to do the pregame show to go, what are some of the things I wanted to talk about during pregame, what were the storylines coming into the game, how was I going to track those storylines, how was I going to be aware of new storylines developing, all of these different things that happen over the course of a broadcast. If I would have started as a camera person, I would have never. It's easy to kind of quote unquote hide behind a camera, because you're like, well, nobody needs to know what I'm thinking right now. I just need to be able to move the camera, right? Let's flip that on its head. Let's get everybody involved in the play-by-play side first, so that they understand everything that has to go into it. From there, it's going to make you a better camera operator. It's going to make you a better producer. It's going to make you understand why the graphics that you're being asked to produce are important. So I would start kids with the play-by-play side and then actually have them expand out. Like, if you've gotten good enough at play-by-play, take on the executive producer role. We had that happen at state basketball a couple weeks ago, actually. We had kids that came specifically to be play-by-play people, and by the end of the semifinals, they are actually the executive producer in charge of the basically 9-person crew that we were dealing with there. So start with the play-by-play, and then work them into different roles, and watch their leadership skills develop. Which is kind of fun.
So it's basically so they have a grasp of all the other areas, or at least have a steering knowledge of.
Yep. Working knowledge. And you know, like I said, as an announcer, I know that the things that I would be looking for as an announcer, mm-hmm. helped me the first time I ever ran a floor camera for an event. We were on the floor, and Well, I know exactly now because I was an announcer, I knew exactly coming out of a timeout, hey, we want to see a shot of the cheerleaders. We want to see a shot of the bench. We want to see a shot of the crowd. I knew all of that without anybody having to tell me, because I knew that would be something that I would talk about if I was announcing the game. I would talk about that. So I'm like, I'm going to go show this. And if my director wants to come back from a commercial break on a shot of the cheerleaders or the crowd or the bench, right, or whatever that is, it's there. It's available. And that cuts down on the needed communication. But that's my opinion, for what it's worth.
All right, cool. What are the best uses for a shotgun microphone?
Yes.
To get the squeaks of the court.
Right.
Shotgun microphones are really good for crowd mics, You can also, if you have a camera that you can mount it on that has the XLR input, you can put it down on your floor camera to get the squeaks of and the, kind of like the chatter. I don't think we've had actually any schools do that yet, just as a crowd. I know Marcus has hoop mics, but that's not a microphone or a shotgun mic.
Freeman had some microphones underneath the hoops, not mounted to the hoops, but on the wall.
Okay.
And so you heard a few more of the squeaks.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah.
Just to add ambience, that mm-hmm. I guess that would be my thing for the shotgun mic, is to add ambience to whether you want to get the crowd or, the floor chatter, whatever. Probably not the coach, but
depends on the coach. But usually not.
Those are kind of the best use. And if you do have it on your floor camera, you wouldn't have to have a microphone if you wanted to interview somebody. You can just use that shotgun microphone mm-hmm. to capture that interview there.
Jordan, how about some situations where you might use more than two broadcast headsets?
Yeah, that would go back to, if you don't have it down on the floor, if you have an interview up in the booth.
Right.
It's easy just to have the coach or whoever you're interviewing throw on that headset, and then they're able to hear themselves along with everybody else. That'd be my biggest thing. I don't know. I've kind of seen it get a little messy when you have that, like, three announcers, four announcers.
It takes the right kind of people, and it takes very defined roles of the three people.
You really have to set the boundaries then?
If you're going to have three people announcing during a game, it can work. You watch the Final Four coming up, or the NCAA tournament that's going on as we do this. Almost all of those crews are three-person crews as far as who's in the quote-unquote booth. I know they're sitting at the table.
Okay.
But you have play-by-play, and you have two color commentary people. But the two color commentary people are also very careful not to step over each other except for maybe a word. And there's a lot of nonverbal communication between those three people. They're looking at each other almost as much as they're looking at their monitors and the floor itself.
Okay.
See, even Jordan's learning something during these things.
Yeah, I am.
Speaking of learning, we have, Jordan, we do have a submitted question, and we want to get to that.
We do. Yes.
And we would love your submitted question, too. So hit us up in the chat. We would love to answer it here live on air. And if it's after we're live, well, then we'll just answer it in the comments, I guess.
Post it in the comments, yeah. Tara Studheit from Johnson Brock asked, what is the best thing to tell/publish on socials when we are having streaming trouble? Sometimes we have a weird Strive Wirecast issue, and sometimes it's a weird us problem. All caps, us. But man, people get irritated. LOL.
Yes, they can. In my estimation, when you do have something that goes wrong and it definitely does interrupt your broadcast, really just acknowledging to your fans, hey, we understand we're having troubles. We are working on them quickly. Hang with us. That's kind of all you need to know. And then that's really kind of all they need to know.
You don't need a 5-point thesis on what's going on.
No, grandma doesn't need to know that the hotspot went out. She just needs to know, hey, we understand it's not working and we're trying to fix it.
Short and sweet to the point.
Yeah.
And then if you happen to be a viewer, please be patient. These are student broadcasts.
Right.
You know, so they are kids. They're trying their best. So that'd be my
Some are really good, and sometimes the issues are out of the hands of even the kids. Everything was done correctly on the school side. Everything was done correctly on the Strive side. Sometimes the internet goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Not very often, but it has happened, and it's not fun for anybody because we kind of sit here too, going that we have no real
we don't have anything
to do.
Yeah.
To fix it. It doesn't happen often.
Well, last year I think it was during football playoffs, Amazon servers went down, or a section of their servers
State
went
volleyball.
Down. State volleyball. Because yeah. I know the Strive side went down.
Yes.
We could not stream because our CDN used Amazon servers that happened to be down. So
nobody that used Amazon servers for anything
yeah.
could be used.
So support call was lighten up after that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just tell them. Short, sweet.
Short, sweet, to the point. We're going to move on to another topic that we had, which was capture cards.
Yeah.
And we've had more in-depth videos about these, so we don't want to spend a ton of time. But as far as the capture cards are concerned, we did have one question that kind of came up because we started talking about the ATEM Mini Pro, which we had here on hand, and wanted to know the difference between the Blackmagic ATEM Mini Pro and the Mini Extreme, and why would a school look to buy one versus the other?
The main thing is inputs. The Mini Pro has four HDMI or SDI. Blackmagic just came out with an ATEM Mini that's an SDI input. So you can do SDI or HDMI. But then the Extreme has eight HDMI or SDI, depending on what you want. So it's seriously just the inputs.
Right.
There's a few other minute things, but that's the why mainly you would want to go to one or the other. And if you have enough cameras that you need to, if you have more than four, then obviously you're going to get the Extreme for the eight, but you can do a lot with four. I probably wouldn't suggest going more than four because there's other processes that you could invest in, I guess, such as like replay. Than going with eight cameras. That's a lot. We could look at our audio, but that's not the question here. Four inputs or eight inputs. So down in the comments, let us know, do you use a capture card or a switcher? And then depending on whatever one you use, what brand do you like or own, run, operate?
What did Jordan sell you?
What did you I sell you?
What did you sell me?
Yuck. At what point should a school make the transition from a capture card to a switcher? Eric?
I have this answer. When a school is ready to go from one camera to multiple, that's when you go.
I like it.
Right? No. When your school says, hey, we want to do more than one, how do we do that? The first step is the switcher, and realize that adding a camera is there are more pieces than just the camera that come with that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so we've talked about that, but when you're ready is when you have got a program that you have a lot of kids interested in being in the program at the same time, and you're actually now actively looking for ways to engage more kids during the production, which is what your fans want to see, because your fans go, hey, we saw this production from this other school and they had like two or three cameras and it looked awesome. Can we do that? Yes. That's how you kind of know that you're ready. Are we ready to invest? Are we ready to make our program as good as it can be? That's the next step. Let's go for it. That's when you're ready for it. If you're just going to hold on and say, you know what, we're fine with one camera, I just want it to work, turn it on, move the camera back and forth, yay. That's not the time for a switcher. But when you are ready for the program, is got kids involved, we need more people involved, we need more things to do, we need more angles, we want a production of our school, that's when you're ready for the switcher. When you start to ask those questions and you start to seek out those answers, that's when you're ready for it. So the other thing that we're ready for is a commercial break.
Yes.
So we are going to take a commercial break, and we'll come right back with more of the Tech and Teaching Podcast live on Strive.
Strive AV is your one-stop destination for all of your audiovisual and IT needs. Strive AV offers over 2,100 top-of-the-line brands and products, ranging from projectors and sound systems to cables, servers, and so much more. Our wide selection of options ensures that you'll always find the perfect solution for any tech need, no matter how complex or specialized. Plus, all of our products come with competitive pricing and unbeatable customer service. So when you need to upgrade or replace your equipment, make sure to shop Strive AV first. So head to striveav.com. That's striveav.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Tech and Teaching Podcast. That, Jordan just got a behind-the-scenes look for the former radio show.
That was a pit stop.
That was a pit stop. Whoo, man, when we talk about it. Well, welcome back to the show. I'm Eric. That's Jordan. I'm literally out of breath. I ran 10 steps down the hallway and back. This is me collecting myself.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Computer hardware was next on our list for things to talk about. And Jordan, this is where we kind of shine the spotlight on your expertise. What other PC laptops would Strive recommend for schools? We had talked about some Lenovo stuff. Mm-hmm. What are some of those for a school that is, you know, kind of strictly PC? What are some of the things that those type of schools should look for when it comes to a new streaming computer?
Yeah, so I would kind of refer you back to our computer video. Maybe that'll be in the description below. But we kind of lay out the specs of what a PC laptop should be. But mainly the thing would be is to find a gaming laptop or a desktop, and you're probably going to be good to go. If you want to get really techie, I guess you can make your own laptop or computer tower, but that's not for everyone. So just get one that's rated for gaming, and you're going to have the RAM, the processor, the graphics card, all that fun stuff to do it correctly.
If your gamer kids come up to you and say, "We need this laptop to stream," it's probably going to work.
Oh, yeah.
Because your gaming kids are all over those kind of specs and stuff like that.
Unless they're going El Cheapo, but that usually doesn't happen.
Not for gamers. Hoosier wouldn't stand for that.
So when it comes down to it, after we just talked about PC, now kind of flipping over to the Mac side.
Yes.
Can a school really just stream with a $600 Mac Mini and $150 monitor from Amazon?
Yes.
Moving on.
Sure. No. no, yes. No, yes, no. That's a very Midwest thing. I'm sorry. Oh, let me squeeze by there and get you the ranch. Sorry. Yes, the Mac Minis are actually awesome. Their downside is they're not overly portable, right? We're not as portable as a MacBook Air or a Pro or something like that. But the streaming capability of the new Mac Minis, we're talking about the ones with the M1 or the M2 chip, they can, the new M2 Mac Mini.
$499
from Apple. Thank you, Marcus. Holy cow.
Wow.
Even less in 5 packs.
Because I need 5 Mac Minis.
Well, you don't, but schools do. Come on. Jeez, Jordan. Hoosier needs 5.
No, you don't.
He's behind the camera and he's going, I need 5. You don't need 5.
One thing I thought of just now is that if you get a monitor that has the VESA mount on it, but then also like the stand for it, you can buy VESA mount Mac Mini mounts.
Yes.
And mount it to the back of your monitor. Yeah. So you're carrying around a monitor and a computer.
Yep.
That would make it a little bit easier at least.
Marcus literally got out of a meeting with Apple people.
We got the inside scoop. Well, you do too. Look in the chat.
Yeah, look in the chat. That's where you get that stuff. Our primary streaming machine for Strive events that we go do is a Mac Mini with an M1 chip from 2020.
And works great.
It's awesome. And it works with... We were kind of rough on some monitors for a few different reasons. So you got to keep that in mind too. If your setup needs to travel beyond, you know, the press box for the football stadium and then back into the gym sort of thing, that's where it gets a little more difficult. But for the most part, yes, the Mac Mini, rock solid machine, has all the necessary ports, has some extra outputs. If I'm not mistaken, and Marcus would correct us, isn't there a new version that has the 4 Thunderbolt outputs again?
Does the M2 have that? I knew
M1. The M1 only has the 2.
Right. It doesn't have enough bandwidth to
right.
have.
The M2 Pro.
If you get the M2 Pro, you can get...
Which starts at $1,300. Starts at...
The Mac Mini?
Hoosier's not even actually producing our show anymore. He's just on the Apple side.
I'm out of here.
Golly. I can't take this kid anywhere. So can it be done for under $1,000? Can you have a really good streaming machine for under $1,000? Absolutely. Jordan, for photo and or video editing and content creation, which would you recommend, Mac or PC?
Well, I'm always the depends guy. What you're comfortable with. Yeah, don't. It depends.
You've mentioned that.
Thank you. Of what your ecosystem that you like to operate in. Then there's also the fact that, I mean, if you just want something to purchase and then you're up and running, the Mac world is great to go. The errors are, I mean, with the M1 chip, that kind of changed a lot. The new Apple Silicon chips, that changed a lot of just the horsepower that they bring. So if you just want something out of the box that you really don't have to think about configuring it to the minute specs like you would have to do with HP or Dell or anything like that, just go to Mac, get it, and away you go. But if you'd really like to, if you're used to Windows, obviously then get Windows. But if you want that ability to upgrade your components later, then maybe PC would be the way to go. And you probably are the person that would want to build your own editing tower. So there's that aspect. So you can still get some ramrod machines out of the gate with PC, but you're really fixed with Mac. And then with PC, you could have some flexibility of upgrading down the road if you needed to. That's my spiel.
Yep.
But it also depends on what are you using, Adobe Premiere or DaVinci Resolve. And so I would like to know what software do you use, DaVinci, or do you like Adobe, or what's the other ones?
I don't know. iMovie.
iMovie. GIMP. I don't know.
Clips those on my iPhone.
Hoosier really likes DaVinci Resolve. So let us know what you like to.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a new course coming out, or a new video on editing with DaVinci Resolve.
Strive Education.
On Strive Education. Strive.education. Check it out. That is the kind of content that we have on Strive.education. You should check it out and get in at a special introductory price. Great community of people like Marcus. You know who uses DaVinci Resolve because they will tell you, yes. That is maybe the greatest YouTube comment ever. I think we can stop the show now. We can. We're good. Are we done? Sure, we can.
We could be. Yeah,
we could be. But let's move on because we do want to get to just a couple more things here, Jordan. Let's move on to Wirecast. We had a fun episode about some of the different things that we do for Wirecast, why we use it, and whatnot. But what is your favorite feature of Wirecast?
I would say it'd be the layers. Just you have them all there. You can lay them out, and then you can mix and match your scenes and everything, and it's very flexible, and you can, as you have kind of discussed in our conferences and our retreats and stuff like that for Strive schools, that how setting up your layers can improve your productivity, then also limit your hot mics on commercials and stuff like that. I really think that layers feature is very powerful.
Yeah, and if you use it right, you could use the fact that you can have multiple layers within a shot, mm-hmm. and then you can have multiple shots on your multiple layers. Like, it's, yeah, Wirecast, pretty cool.
Oh, I have a trivia question. Can I do a trivia question?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trivia question. We'll answer this later, like in a different show. But
do I know this answer?
You might.
Oh.
But how many layers or sources can you have in one shot? Like if you create a shot in your top layer, master layer one,
uh-huh.
and then you go and you hit the plus button and you start adding like your graphics or your video sources or something. How many of those, like how many times can you add something before Wirecast will not let you? Not before your computer crashes.
Mm.
That's kind of subjective.
Two different things, huh?
Yeah, no. When Wirecast says, no, this number of sources or layers is too much.
In one single shot.
One single shot.
Within.
So think about it. You think about it. And we'll release that trivia question at a later show.
I know a number that a Strive school has gotten to, but I don't think it was the max.
Well, why don't you share?
Can I share that?
Yeah, why not?
26 is what has been put into a shot. That was actually just trying to see if they could hit the max. They got to 26.
Oh, they were just messing around.
Yeah, they were just messing around. I won't out the school and I won't out the student, but I went on a school visit a couple years ago, and they were like, you know, we've got, you know, kids are doing some really cool graphic stuff, and they were really proud of the different graphics that they were doing. They just couldn't figure out, like, man, is it really this hard to show the different graphics? And I went, well, no, you can drop them into Wirecast, you know, space them out. And they went, what do you mean space them out? They had like, not 26, but they had 18 different graphics in the, they only had one shot Wirecast that was active at all, period. Right? We have five layers.
He sandwiched everything into that one.
He put every commercial, every lower third graphic, the scoreboard, the corner graphics, everything. And then he was using the eyeballs to turn them on and off. And I went, oh no, let's fix that. And I mean, you want to, like, I know why teachers teach. When I showed this student and that class how to get those separated out, like the collective gears all synced up in that class. I mean, it was a visible, like, it was kind of cool. But 26 is the highest number I have seen. I look forward to the actual answer.
All right.
And for in-stream advertisements, what are some key features in Wirecast that schools should be using? When it comes to advertising, I will say that there are two features of Wirecast that a school should know how to use right off the bat. The first one is image carousel, the ability to drop in multiple logos into the same, essentially it's the same source at that point, and it automatically rotates. You can size it differently. You can add a transparent background, do stuff like that, kind of some basic stuff. The image carousel is absolutely the easiest way to have multiple advertiser logos loaded at the same time.
Probably the easiest way to monetize or advertise in your stream, period.
Period.
You set it up and you
set that image carousel up at the beginning of the year and you don't have to touch it as long as your template doesn't break or anything like that. And even if it does, hey, all you got to do is reinstall the image carousel and there it is.
Away you go.
So it's really not hard. Number two is playlists. If a school is doing video commercials or video PSAs, whatever it is, drop them into a playlist within Wirecast and you can actually set automatic transitions to go back to whatever on Wirecast so that when you get done with a commercial break, if you will, you can set that, you can tell Wirecast what to do at the end of the playlist. Do you want it to loop back to the start of the playlist and keep going? Or do you want to go back to whatever you have in the preview window? Or do you want to go back to whatever you had in the previous shot?
There's a lot of flexibility.
There's a ton of flexibility. And when you are, if you start to deal with advertisements that are videos, so easy to build a system that kind of runs itself. When you think about that, if I have the transition coming back from the commercial break already done, already set up, when I start the commercial break, I don't have to do anything again until I'm back into the game.
That's really
in Wirecast.
Nice.
I'm like, okay, I have a minute break. I don't have to do anything. Now my game's back on. Okay. Now I'm going to start my clock and go.
Now the operator can also take a mental break too.
Right.
And I've thrown just one commercial into a playlist,
yes,
just so I could get that functionality of, hey, I want it to go back to my preview window or, you know, whatever specific shot I want. So just don't feel like you have to put multiple pieces of media in there. You can put just one in there because whatever reason, Wirecast didn't allow you to set that up, that transition up with just on the media side. It has to be a playlist, but
a playlist of one.
Yeah, go for it.
Yep. That's all we have on this. I'm out of notes, Jordan. I'm out of things we've highlighted. There you go. The show's over. Thanks for watching, folks. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We would love to interact more with you guys. Visit us on strive.education and see all of the cool things going on in our community. We would love to work with your school on digital media, whether that is live streaming, whether it's photo editing, podcasting, equipment, whatever it is that the digital media world is as big as you think it could possibly be, and then it's still bigger. That's
always
just
bigger.
That's just the nature of the beast, right? So we would love to work with you and your school. So visit us today at strive.education. That's Jordan. I'm Eric. Hoosiers behind the computer. Thanks for watching us today on the Tech and Teaching Podcast Live Edition.